We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
Yes, indeed. Time to get things started. We'll go to Buffalo, New York. Our man Sal Capaccio, WGR, is going to lead us off. The two-minute drill, by the way, brought to you by our friends at Twin Peaks. TwinPeaksRestaurant.com, looking for a place that's got the ultimate TV setup, made-from-scratch menu, and ice-cold beer. I'm talking about 29-degree draft beer. How about some lovely scenery as well? I'm talking about Twin Peaks. Go to TwinPeaksRestaurant.com. If you just want some carryout, you can order there as well in Independence and Olathe. It is your spot to watch some football. It's Twin Peaks. TwinPeaksRestaurant.com. Sal, welcome, my friend. How are you?
Excellent, man. Just enjoying the last of the maybe, I guess, 80-degree days here in Buffalo. It's beautiful here, but We know the weather's going to turn soon, but it's gorgeous.
Yeah, it turned for us yesterday as some rain came in and cooled everything off. And so we've got football weather here in Kansas City, and we're excited about the team. A game between the Chiefs and Ravens, but maybe these two teams are chasing your team, the Bills. 3-0. How good is this team?
They're good. They're really good. Sir, and you know, I mean, you and I go back a long way. We went to college together. You know that I was taking a Greyhound bus from Syracuse University back to Orchard Park every Sunday for Bills home games as a season ticket holder during the Super Bowl years. And I got to tell you, even a couple months ago, I was saying this is the best roster they've had maybe since those teams. Now, I know that that's not saying much considering they weren't very good for 20 years, but this is a good roster. It's a deep roster. Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott have done an excellent job. They have a great coaching staff. And, of course, the continuity, same head coach, same coordinators, same quarterback. They have very little turnover, just like I know in Kansas City, and that's helping. But, obviously, let's be honest, it's the trigger man. It's Josh Allen. He's making it all go. He's putting up historic numbers right now, and he is proving to be right now a franchise quarterback that they can actually win games with.
Yeah, and that is really scary because everyone's always liked the roster that the Buffalo Bills have and liked the other pieces. It was, is Josh Allen going to take that next step? And he appears to be the one quarterback from that class. Well, he and Lamar Jackson was in that class as well, right?
He's
becoming
right.
the second quarterback to take that step. But out of the guys that went up there at the very top, the Rosen and the Darnold, he's looking like he is the best. And to win a game, you know, it was defense and run the ball. To win a game where he's got to throw it all over the yard shows that they can win a game in so many different ways. Now, that being said, is there some concern that this Bills defense isn't what it used to be?
I think there's a little concern in Buffalo over the last couple of weeks. They've given up 2 second-half leads and then had to ride Allen on the way back home in the fourth quarter to win both of them. But, you know, look, Sean McDermott and Leslie Frazier can coach defense. We know that. They've always typically had one of the better defenses since they got here. They do have good personnel on that side of the ball. But I do think that teams are attacking them differently, and they're using maybe the Bills' lack of size or a little bit undersized, I think, in certain parts. And yesterday we saw a physical, big offensive line running at them. That's probably the way the teams are going to approach them. But overall, it's also because they're just playing better teams, and the Bills are going to be a higher-scoring team. So other teams are attacking them to try and get in shootouts now. It's not, hey, you know, we're going to play a 20-17 game for the Bills. So the other team says, we're just not going to make mistakes and, you know, we're going to try and win also low scoring. So I think it's a combination of a lot of things. I don't think it's panic mode or anything like that, but there are some things that need to be cleaned up on defense for sure.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, they go to the Raiders, and they are a favorite on the road. This is the next step, right? It's one thing to be the hunter. It's another to be the hunted. They're laying points on the road. Do you think that's the right number?
Probably, but it's close. I mean, I think this game should be, you know, a field goal either way. You know, I mean, if you want to say Raiders are home team, give them a favorite edge, 1 or 2 points, something like that. But look, I mean, the way that the Raiders, I think, looked in New England yesterday is probably what swings this game that way, which is the Bills are scoring a lot of points. The Raiders have been leaky on defense this year, but their offense is good. This might be another shootout. I mean, it's been a long time, Seren, a long time, since we can talk about exciting, high-scoring football games here in Orchard Park or when the Bills go on the road. But that's the kind of team they are, and I think that they're getting a lot of respect from that Vegas line because of the type of offense they have and specifically the way Josh Allen is playing.
Yeah, no doubt. That'll take you a long way, for sure. It could be a lot of fun if we get to the off season and we have the Bills and the Chiefs going head to head. Sal, I hope we do, my friend. I hope we do. Sal
well,
Capaccio
Thursday night here in a couple of weeks, right? Thursday night here, October 15th. By the way, some news on that today. The county executive here in Buffalo in Erie County said he is open to having 7,000 fans at the stadium for that game, which is about 10% capacity. But New York State, as of this time, is not allowing that. Saran, right now, there's no fans allowed at Bills games. And as of right now, there would be no fans at that game. But the team wants it badly to open it up by then. There is some talks going on. The county executive is open to it, but we don't know where the state is on this yet.
Yeah, well, it's going to be a lot of fun when we get to it, and hopefully you'll have some fans there because I think it makes a better atmosphere. I think the Chiefs play better with some fans in the building than they do with none, because they really struggle to get things going against the Chargers in an empty building. But we will see. Sal, you're the man, buddy. We appreciate it. Thanks for the time, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Always, my brother. Thanks.
Matthew Caller, Purple Insider in Minneapolis, Minnesota is next. Matthew, how are you, sir?
I am good. Shout out to Sal Capaccio. We used to do a Saturday show together in Buffalo.
Very nice. Very nice. Yeah, everybody, get the band back together. That's what we got going on right here. The Vikings have seemingly nothing going on right now. At 0-3, and I know our buddy Eric Eager has been touting that, this team is not going to be very good this year, and so far they're living up to that. How surprised are you that they sit right now at 0-3?
Well, you know, there was always this wide spectrum of potential results for this team, and in one world, everything went right, and Danielle Hunter wasn't hurt, and Michael Pierce didn't opt out, and their rookie corners played well, and their rookie receivers and weapons played well, and they are good right now. But that's not the world we're living in. We're living in the worst-case scenario, which was the rookie corners can't cover anyone. Their weapons, aside from Justin Jefferson's emergence, has not been very good. The offensive line has been horrendous. And what we know about Kirk Cousins is that he is not really capable of overcoming any of those things. So when our buddy Eric Eager was on my podcast saying before the season the Vikings would go 6-10, a lot of fans bristled at that. But there was always a decent chance he would be right. And, I think through these first couple of weeks that everything has sort of gone the exact wrong way for them to be 0-3, including the fact that Steven Gostkowski all of a sudden figured out how to kick field goals from anywhere he wants at U.S. Bank Stadium.
Yeah, the Vikings are a team that seems to be, like, Kirk Cousins is a good quarterback, but not a great quarterback, right? So that's one of the things that, like, when you teeter on that edge, everything around him has to be working for them to be successful. And they just kind of seem like the team that benefits from the schedule 1 year, and then they're kind of hurt by the schedule, or benefits from injuries 1 year, and then they're kind of hurt by injuries, and that ends up holding them back. They're the first team ever to have a 175-yard rusher, Dalvin Cook had 181, and a 175-yard receiver and lose. I mean, that you're usually not supposed to be able to put that kind of production up there and come away with a loss. What's wrong with the defense? And, I mean, that's the head coach's side of the ball. Why aren't they better there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it really starts with their cornerbacks that, speaking of someone like Pro Football Focus, they'll tell you that corners are more valuable than rushers. And yesterday we saw that because the Vikings pass rush was actually quite good. Yannick Ngakoue looked fantastic. Fadi Adenabo, a guy they have really liked for a couple years now, he had 5 quarterback pressures yesterday, and yet it didn't matter when they completed a 61-yard pass, 2 other passes over 30 yards, and that was without even having the number one wide receiver, A.J. Brown, in the game, which I think tells you the issues that they've had. It's been communication problems with corners and safeties and linebackers. It's been one-on-one. Their corners have just been smoked by even decent receivers. We were trying to see if we could figure out who Khalif Raymond was yesterday when he caught a 60-yard pass. That's been happening a lot so far in these first couple of weeks, of guys that you haven't heard of and are free agents in fantasy who all of a sudden have these big games, which I think tells you where this season is going to go from the secondary. And it's something that's been rock solid over the last number of years under Zimmer, with these corners that he developed, or veterans like Terrence Newman or Captain Munnerlyn, guys that were very solid veterans and established, and now they just don't have that. And then they've got the injuries also. And there's just the point that you made about Kirk Cousins is exactly right, that they could have won yesterday. They could have overcome that. They could have won against Indianapolis. They were down, I think, 18-3 or something. It's not like they gave up 40 points at just the snap of fingers. Yesterday they're up, 24-12 at one point in the third quarter, and the defense is playing okay. But you've got to stick the dagger in their back. You've got to get the game-winning drive. And those are things that just Cousins doesn't do, and that's why the fan base keeps tweeting me memes of Trevor Lawrence.
Well, they're on track. I'll give them that. Minnesota Twins are the 3 seed in the American League. They're going to take on the Astros. Not really the prize you wanted to get for winning the division is to have to take on that team, or is it? Are we finding out that the Astros either are collapsing from the weight of all the scandal, or no, they can't hit without trash cans banging out what the pitch is? Do you like or dislike this matchup?
I mean, I actually like this matchup for the Twins because it's just not the New York Yankees. I mean, the Yankees, and now I, as a sports talk host type, I tend to lean a little bit toward maybe you wanted the Yankees because, hey, exercise your demons, go beat them. But at the same time, I think the Yankees just have had the Twins number for so long that they're relieved to see someone else. And from my own personal standpoint, getting a chance for the hometown club to put, you know, the nail in the coffin of the Astros, who we all, let's not forget, hate for what they did in cheating, that could be pretty fun. And you know what? I wouldn't mind to see Jose Altuve maybe, like, not hit the ball at all and really struggle. So there's that extra element of it. It's like, well, you're the team that has a chance to kind of prove that they were frauds and cheaters, and there's some fun drama that comes along with that.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. Matthew Caller in Minneapolis, great stuff, buddy. We appreciate the time. Have yourself a great week, my friend.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Gus Kattengill, ESPN New Orleans in New Orleans, Louisiana. Gus, how are you, sir?
How are you? What is it like to have a good offense and a quarterback? I'd like to know.
You know, you've been spoiled for quite some time, just not seeing it right now. And how concerning is that? Is that the biggest topic of conversation on your show?
Well, it was last week, 2:34 p.m. last Tuesday. We had a caller call and say it was Jameis Winston time. And then I tried to explain, look, when Drew Brees and Sean Payton say the problem is timing and spacing and route running, putting in someone that doesn't know the offense probably isn't going to help you. So that was last week. This week, what's remarkable to me is I opened up today's show by saying, pick, you know, quarterback A and quarterback B. Tell me who had the most yards. And I gave the yards. Drew Brees threw for more than Aaron Rodgers yesterday. The
right.
Saints rushed more than the Packers. The Saints had more yards than the Packers, yet they lost the game. So I don't think Saints fans know how to sort of react or are ready to say it's the offense's problem, but obviously you saw the defense and their lack thereof. But as I kept bringing up the point, I think today, Serena's, it was tied 27 apiece in the fourth quarter. You got a fourth down stop and you had a chance to take the lead. It felt like a game between two good teams in the NFC. So I would put the Packers up there at 1, 2, or 3 right now, right? And I look at it like this and say, look, there's only 3 teams that are undefeated, 5 teams that are 1-2, 4 teams that are 2-1. So that Raiders game, you take that clunk out, most people probably would think the Saints could be 2-1 going into the Lions game. Win this week, win the Chargers, go into the bye, and at this point just make to the playoffs and see where you can get better. So I don't think the world is ending, but there are some concerning things of the team.
I don't think they're dead yet, but you know, scoring those, getting those scores when you got to have it, that's what the great quarterbacks do. And Drew Brees was one of those great quarterbacks. Maybe he's just not anymore.
Look, and that's one of the things that concerns me, right? So I asked the question today, what is your big takeaway from the first 3 weeks? And that's just it. I still think the Saints are a playoff team. But are they a Super Bowl contender? I don't feel that. Because to be a Super Bowl contender, you're going to have to go up against maybe Russell Wilson, maybe Aaron Rodgers, some of those guys, you know, and that you have a quarterback that can push the ball down the field and have you score. And, look, I get it. Alvin Kamara is incredible, and you can matriculate down the field and do those things in ducks. But, I mean, you know, I'm trying to create a bumper sticker, make some extra cash, check down for the touchdown. That's the new offense for the Saints right now. I mean, it really is. I mean, I can get you a T-shirt, black and gold. We can even do white, you know, color rush. I mean, I'm checked down for the touchdown. I would have never thought that that's the Saints offense, but that's what it is right now. Even if Michael Thomas comes back, that guy doesn't beat you down the field. He beats you in the intermediate passing game. So that's their offense, and the margin of error when you have an offense like that is smaller because you're going to have to make good plays. So penalties is killing them right now, and also injuries.
Yeah, Alvin Kamara is not a bad option when you check it down, though. I will say that. All right. Look, I had just a couple. I'll give LSU fans credit. Just a couple. My AP vote, apparently I had LSU in the preseason, the second lowest of anybody out there. So I got a couple of tweets about that, which is always fun. But I said to the guy, I'm like, listen, 15 draft picks, two first-round caliber opt-outs, a new quarterback. Yeah. You lost your offensive coordinator, really in theory your offensive coordinator, and your defensive coordinator. That's I don't know that Nick Saban's ever had to replace all that at once. This Mississippi State game shouldn't be that unexpected, is it?
100% with you. I mean, I picked 7-3 at the beginning of the season and said I could envision 6-4. And naturally, to follow what you did last year is going to be difficult, right? And, you know, you mentioned what went to the draft, but I'll raise you, 19 of 22 starters are gone. I don't know who's replacing that, man. I mean, that's a ton. So, and then you add what this offseason's been like. You didn't have the spring ball like you normally have for Miles Brennan and all of them, and he looked, you know, deer in headlights, which is baffling because he's been there 3 years. So you would think you would know a little bit more than he does. So, but it's not all on him. I mean, look, 623 yards, but that's reach, right? I mean, that's why Mississippi State went and got him, and that's what that is. And between him and Kiffin, you're going to have to score. And look, I mean, they didn't make the adjustment by Pelini on the defensive side. They kept playing man and playing press, and we said it after the game. When you do that, we got to go over the top. So, shared it out. I mean, you got a guy that literally is philosophy is you don't have to run the football to win the game. So you got to be prepared for that. So I think maybe a little bit overconfidence in that, you know, I get, man, you hear this all the time in sports, the whole next man up philosophy. And like I said today on the show, I get that. That's supposed to help you guys get ready for when you get that opportunity. But it doesn't mean the next man up is a first-round draft pick. The next man up doesn't necessarily mean that he's Joe Burrow. He doesn't have to be. I think Joe would have had trouble winning that game when your defense gives up 600 yeah. passing yards. So, I mean, it was an SEC record. Think, Soren, of all of the quarterbacks that have played in the SEC, that have won Heismans, that have played in superior offenses, and the record was this past Saturday in Mississippi State. So think of that. That kind of goes to tell you how big a performance that was. It wasn't a Florida Gator, you know, or anybody like yeah. that in the past. It wasn't even Burrow. You know, that guy.
Yeah, that is it's amazing. Hey, great stuff as always, Gus. We really appreciate it. Have yourself a great week, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Sure, man. Always a pleasure. Take care.
Welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Time to talk to the quarterback as we get ready for our pregame, Central Bank of the Midwest pregame show, coming up right around the corner. First, let's talk to the quarterback, Trent Green from CBS Sports, NFL analyst, joins us here on our T-Mobile guest line. How are you, Trent?
I'm doing great. Another exciting weekend of football, that's for sure. And yeah, just, you know, it's that time of year where you kind of start seeing, okay, you know, everybody's anticipating when the season starts, what's going to happen. And then after, you know, a week, people go too drastically one direction or another. But after 3 weeks, you can kind of see, you know, how teams are going to unfold, how things are going to unfold, the divisions getting laid out. It's yeah, it's exciting time.
Yeah, it is. And let's start with the game you had. You guys had, you and Kevin Harlan had Colts and Jets. Are the Jets as bad as I think they are?
Unfortunately, yes. yeah, you know, you go in and you look at it on paper and you look at all the stuff that, you know, what the Colts have in place. They're very talented. And you look at it and you say, okay, are the Jets that bad? And you look at the number of injuries, the number of starters they don't have. They went out and they kind of revamped the offense and the defensive side of the ball. And yeah, it's just, it is, you know, it started off, Darnold threw a pick six on the first series. And then they went down and drove the length of the field, scored a touchdown, got it 7-7. They controlled the ball 10 minutes of the first quarter. And then that was it. then it was 26 straight points for the Colts. The Colts ended up with two pick sixes. They ended up with a safety on defense. Justin Houston had a sack in the end zone for the Colts. So yeah, unfortunately, that's kind of the direction of the Jets. And they play a short week against Denver at home on Thursday. So.
Oh God, I mean that's good. That's it's just a bloodbath, and I don't like anybody to lose their job, but. you know, Gase seemed like he was on thin ice coming in, but, you know,
right.
we'll see how long that, you know, all of a sudden
yeah,
everyone traded him.
You know what? I like Adam. I've known Adam a long time. He, he's a Mike Martz disciple from way back with the Detroit Lions is when he kind of got started in the NFL and he was working for Mike. So I've known him a long time. It's just, I don't know if he's going to be able to survive this because they have the short week. And depending on how things go against Denver, you know, you hear all kinds of rumblings out of New York and everybody's guessing what potentially could happen. But, it's just the nature of the business, unfortunately.
So let's look at the flip side, and that is the Colts. I know they had the upset loss to the Jaguars. The Jaguars have proven to be better than people thought they were going to be. The Colts have handled business each of the last 2 weeks. Do you think that they are an actual contender, a team that could take out a Baltimore or a Kansas City? You know, maybe not both, which is probably what you're going to have to do if you're not Baltimore or Kansas City. But do they strike you as a team that could be dangerous?
They do. And after watching that Jacksonville game, going back and looking at it, you know, Rivers had interceptions in that game. They had a missed field goal in the game. They had a turnover on downs in the game. And, you know, their defense after the first half pretty much shut them down. It was just a matter of field position. And, you know, they really should have won the game. I mean, when you look statistically and based on everything, if it wasn't for the they had a couple, like I said, a couple red zone opportunities, missed field goal, interceptions. You know, it was there. Jacksonville just didn't have the mistakes. But to your question, their defense is outstanding. I mean, they really are. I think they're giving up 120, maybe 200. Going into the game, they were giving up 208 yards a game after two games, and then after yesterday, I think they're at 224 or 222. So they're not giving up many yards. Yesterday they scored 16 points on their own. They're a good football team. And I think Rivers, the first game against Jacksonville, he threw 46 times. The second game when they won, he threw 25. I think yesterday he was probably in the 20s, low 20s. So, I mean, I think that's kind of their formula. They really like Jonathan Taylor, the running back out of Wisconsin. Devastating the injury to Marlon Mack, but I think with Taylor there, they got a nice mix with Nyheim Hines as kind of the third down changeup back. And then that offensive line, they've started 19 consecutive games together, and they've got a lot of continuity and athleticism on that. So, they are very balanced, and they're a team that can cause trouble.
And we'll see if Rivers can, you know, I'm sure it takes more than just, you know, training camp with no preseason games to be able to readjust your mindset to, you know, I don't have to do everything, right? That's one of the things that he's got to get beyond,
right,
is learning that he doesn't have to do everything. And if he can do that, then just let this roster around him. You know, I think the Colts are kind of sneaky dangerous because, you know, going into last year when everyone thought they were going to have, or 2 years ago when they thought they were going to have Andrew Luck, That was last year. When they thought they were going to have Andrew Luck, everybody loved the roster that they were building. You know, they came off, they lost to the Chiefs in the playoffs in 18, but everybody loved the direction they were going. And then, you know, they don't have Luck and they actually did okay for a little while, but then they, you know, you find out how important that quarterback. How important the quarterback is.
Yeah. Well, and Jacoby Brissett, you know, they didn't want to blame it. Frank Reich was very, very outspoken and said, listen, you know, that was a tough conversation with Jacoby because I didn't want him to feel like it was his fault. But there was a history there. You get an opportunity to get a guy like Phillip Rivers. He knows the system. Like I said, Frank had been with him. Nick Sirianni, the offensive coordinator who was here in Kansas City for a while. He knew him from the Chargers also, so there was just it just fit for what they were, you know, what they were trying to get done.
All right, let's talk about what we've got going on here tonight. You know, there's a lot of football to be played after this, so even if the Chiefs or Ravens would lose this game, they've still got a chance to make up the ground and be the number one seed. The Ravens were the number one seed last year after having lost to the Chiefs. So this isn't everything, and everybody around this game is doing everything they can to play it down as one of just 16. But what are they really thinking? What's the mindset in there? They know how big this is, right? And they're going
to
be.
There's no way to downplay this game. Come on. I mean, this is what everybody's been talking about since, what, last November. Right. It's, you know, these two are on a collision course and then the Titans you know, the Titans threw a wrench into it last year. And then now the same thing coming into the season. These are the two teams that everybody wants to see. And it just so happens, you know, they get to face off in week three. And I think everybody's anticipating no matter what happens, they're going to see each other again down the road. So, yeah, it's exciting. You know, you talk about the two dynamic quarterbacks. You talk about the defenses. You talk about, you know, playmakers on both sides, guys that can take it the distance every time they touch the ball. It's got everything, you know. And then you got the Harbaugh and Reed connection from the Philly days. So I mean, there's a lot of plots to this matchup tonight. It could be their highest rated Monday night game in a long time.
Yeah, everyone's zeroing in on this one. Look, can Andy Reid hold things back? I've been watching the first couple of games where they spent a lot of time just handing the ball off on what I thought were some pretty basic run plays against the Texans. You know, didn't have a lot of his nuances that were there. And then not a great offensive game against the Chargers. But, you know, I talked to people in the around the organization. They're like, hey, that's what these games with the Chargers always end up being. For whatever reason, that's what it ends up being. But could it be that he's got some things on the shelf that he's waiting to unleash against the Ravens? I know everybody does game plan specific, so the weaknesses of the Ravens are going to be attacked by Andy Reid, not attacking the Texans' weaknesses in this game, right? So I get that, but can you actually have some stuff that you're holding back and you didn't have to use to get your first two wins?
I think you do. I just think if you look at any coaching staff, what they're going to do is take their first four opponents, look at it on the schedule, try and formulate some ideas and some things that you want to have specific for that opponent. So it wouldn't surprise me if we saw some new wrinkles. It may be things that they practiced in training camp and didn't tell the players, didn't tell the media, didn't tell whoever that they're working on, but knew they were working on it for week three, week four, whatever it may be, just to try and get some work in on. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all that would be the case. I think you're going to have to do that. I think when you think about, you know, Wink Martindale, their defensive coordinator, what he has, you know, Marcus Peters wasn't with the Ravens last time. I don't believe he was with them last time that the Chiefs faced. I think that trade happened after the matchup last year. And then, Humphreys is all pro, the other corner. They got outstanding linebackers. He likes to bring blitzes and different disguises and pressure and, you know, that's going to be the interesting thing is that Mahomes does so well against blitz and against man-to-man coverage. Is that really what you're going to try and do? And if so, who are you going to match up with everybody? And, that's where the Chiefs have always come out on top in that is you can't cover everybody. So that's going to be the matchup that I want to see is the play calling of Andy Reid against, you know, Don Wink Martindale, the defensive coordinator for the Ravens, just kind of see how that back and forth goes.
You know, I look at it, the last two games that they've played in 18 and 19, you know, you try to find, okay, what was the key to victory? I mean, it's certainly not your traditional stats that you look at. The Ravens ran for 194 in 2018, and they ran for 2003 last year. And last year's game looks close at 33-28, but it was 30-13 Chiefs at the end of the third quarter. So there was an oh-by-the-way touchdown that you know, took it from 33-22 to 33-28 with 2 minutes left in the game. So the game really wasn't as close as that score makes it look, but they ran for 200 yards. They seemingly did, and Lamar Jackson threw for 267. They seemingly did everything they wanted to do. They didn't turn the ball over, and they couldn't beat the Chiefs. Is there just something wrong with their approach that the Chiefs are just their kryptonite?
Well, it could be. You know, you look at Andy's record, you look at Mahomes' record against them and the success that they've had. I keep going into this thinking, I know everybody, you know, everybody's, I think I'm hoping for it, and I think a lot of other people are hoping for kind of a shootout type thing that the Chiefs and Rams had a couple years ago, or was it even last year? I can't remember that.
Yeah, it was 2 years ago.
2 years ago, the Monday night game that was just points up and down the field. I think there's a lot of people anticipating that, but for some reason, I think that the Ravens, as you said, the way they've rushed the ball the last couple times, I think they're going to run a lot more. And I think the Chiefs, when you look at how Baltimore has been beaten the last two times, Tennessee in the playoffs last year, and then their last regular season loss a year ago was against the Browns. Both teams ran the ball very well. So it could be, you know, it could be where we see a lot of running tonight, which is going to be odd with, you know, the two quarterbacks that are in the game. But I wouldn't be surprised if that ends up being the way that it goes as well.
Yeah, I am intrigued by that. And I mean, what does Steve Spagnuolo have to say to his defensive line and his front seven in general about Lamar Jackson when they, you know, they obviously want to try to stop the run and get him into obvious passing downs, but he's so dangerous, you know, escaping out of there. How much of the teeth of this rush get taken away by guys having to remain gap sound so that he doesn't take off and run for 15 yards when you come after him?
Well, that's going to be the thing that I look at also. Are they going to go, you know what, let's keep everybody attacking, because you don't want to just let him stand back there the whole time. So keep everybody attacking and then maybe have that spy linebacker or spy safety that's just going to be hanging around 5 yards deep, just trying to mirror him wherever he goes. Will that be, you know, Tyrann Mathieu? Will that be his task? You know, how will they, I guess, spy him just to take away the potential run element every time there's a pass play called? So I wouldn't just maintain in your lanes and do kind of that thing. But gosh, that's the scary part with Lamar Jackson is, you know, that's a different dimension than what Patrick has. Patrick looks to extend plays, and yes, he can with his feet, but he's looking to throw deep up the field. Lamar, even though he has some weapons with speed, you know, he'll take off and run, and he's got that track speed.
Travis Kelce said Saturday, I think it was their last media day. He said, listen, what Baltimore does, it's not really their coverages. It's how they come at you with the blitz. And, you know, they're not Pittsburgh, who was I saw his blitzing on more than 50% of their defensive snaps or 50% of the dropbacks of the other team. But that is what they want to do, is they want to come after you. And Patrick Mahomes has had success in these games. By the way, these two games collectively, he's 62 of 90 for 751, 5 touchdowns and 1 INT with a 108 yeah. passer rating. So it hasn't affected him. But what is the right. key that he's got to remember, you know, with that Baltimore blitz? What's he looking at?
Well, it's you know, Marcus Peters. He likes to look in the backfield. So when they're bringing the pressure and you're trying to get the throw off quick, as Chiefs fans know all too well, Marcus will get beat for a big play, but he's always got his eyes on the quarterback. If he's in man coverage, zone coverage, whatever it is, and it's a little unorthodox. It's not necessarily the way the Ravens want him to play. If you watch Humphrey on the other side, you know, as far as the in-your-face physical kind of corner, it's a little bit different style than what Marcus Peters plays. But, you know, Marcus Peters has proven that he's able to get those interceptions as well. So I think that's the thing you got to be a little bit scared about. But I would look for them to do something different just because the numbers you just rattled off, the success that Mahomes has had against them, the success that Mahomes has had against blitzes and man coverage, you know, I would think they would have to do some kind of wrinkle. And it helps Baltimore that they got Calais Campbell. They got Derek Wolfe. They went out and got a couple of veteran defensive linemen that they can try and do some different things with.
Is there a way to, you know, bait Marcus Peters, right? A pump fake? You show him,
oh, yeah,
you look,
definitely.
You have the pump, yes. pump and go?
We've seen that here in Kansas City, and they definitely saw it in Los Angeles with the Rams. I think that was part of the reason. Because he was more risk reward, what he was doing out in LA. So, you can get him on the double moves. And the problem is if you're getting blitz pressure and you're able to pick it up, then you can get that. It's when all of a sudden somebody's coming free and you don't have time for the double move, and you know, it all goes hand in hand.
So the O-line did not, and we're talking to Trent Green here in the program, they did not have their best day against the Chargers, and he was under a lot of duress. And I was looking back to see if there were other opportunities for them to go for it on fourth down. It was amazing how long they were at 4th and 9, 4th and 12, you know, all these situations where you couldn't even consider, you know, giving Patrick Mahomes an extra down to try to beat the Chargers because they were in all these long-distance downs. And he was running around. Now, they started using that to their advantage in the second half with him running for over 50 yards. And, of course, the biggest play of the game, 3rd and 20, and he runs for 22 yards. But are we starting to get a little concerned that maybe they're getting a little older on the outside at the tackles or that the offensive line got exposed by the Chargers?
I don't think so. I think if you just look at the history of that rivalry, even though the Chiefs have have won the majority of the games. I think they've only lost one of them in recent years. They, you know, it's always a close game. And the Chargers, Gus Bradley, I mean, that's what they do defensively and the personnel they have defensively. It matches up well with what the Chiefs are doing. So, I guess I don't read as much into that. I think some of it's just divisional play and the talent and kind of the knowing each other pretty well. So, but listen, like I said, Baltimore stacked. I mean, their defense is stacked. Their play calling, Martindale does a great job of play calling. Like I said, they added Calais Campbell and Derek Wolfe. So their front four is better than what it was a year ago, I think. Their linebackers and secondary are outstanding as well. So it's I can't hype up this game enough. It's going to be exciting.
All right, well, it's time for our final four here with Trent Green from CBS Sports. It's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If you have an urgent orthopedic or sports injury, the University of Kansas Health System can see you quickly. They've added extended hours during the week and have a Saturday morning walk-in clinic in Overland Park. Request an appointment at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. Trent, I will start you with this. Russell Wilson broke the three-game touchdown mark that Patrick Mahomes had established. He had 13. Russell Wilson now has 14 through three games. How many does he finish with?
Well, he's had back-to-back with five touchdowns. As you said, first back to do four-plus the first 3 weeks of the season. Let's see. Let's say 45. I mean, it's hard to maintain that pace. So yeah, it'll be somewhere in the 40s. I would guess, since he's already at 14. But yeah, that's hard. That's hard to keep that pace.
And if DK Metcalf didn't let off the Jets, he'd have one more.
Exactly.
So he's been on fire. Yeah. All right. Where does Lucas Oil Stadium rank in the NFL?
Wow, that's a beautiful stadium. It's got to be top 10 without going through all. I mean, there's so many new stadiums that have been built in recent years, but I loved it yesterday because the weather allowed the roof to be open, and then they actually can open one end. So you get kind of this whole – you get like an outside feel to it because, you know, you can open two sides, so the roof and one side. So I would put it top 10. I love it. I like the makeup. Obviously, the pandemic and everything that's going on has affected downtown Indy just like it's affected every city. But that's one of my favorite places to go, not just because I went to college down the road, but just because of where the stadium is and the whole downtown, the way the convention center and the basketball arena. I mean, it's all right there within walking distance. I enjoy it just because once you get to your hotel, as you know, it's a good setup they have.
Yeah, I like that downtown a lot too as well. I got your back on that. All right, they're on the road, so they'll be wearing the white jerseys. Are you a fan of the white pants with the white jerseys or the red pants?
Well, I think the traditional is the red pants, but I like the all white. I think the all white's just it's a cool look.
So
I think if you're going more tradition, it'd be the red. But if you're going for a little more stylish pizzazz, I guess go all white.
Okay. All right. And finally, give me your prediction on the game.
You know, I've been back and forth. You know, I had Baltimore a couple weeks ago. I was thinking all along the Chiefs, and then after last week's game, I was like, man, Baltimore stacked. And then the more I'm thinking about it, you know, the success that Andy Reid has had against John Harbaugh, then I started, you know, watching yesterday's games, and I see what Green Bay did down in New Orleans. And New Orleans is such a tough place to play, but it was completely different without fans in there, without a lot of fans in there. And you saw the job that Aaron Rodgers did with his cadence and everything without the fans. And so Baltimore is an incredibly tough place to play, but without fans or without, you know, a full stadium of fans, it makes it a little bit different. So I'm gonna go back to my original, which is going to be Kansas City. I think they find a way to win it. I think that until Baltimore and Lamar Jackson can prove that they can beat Andy Reid and the Chiefs, I think, you know, you have to pick Kansas City until they can prove otherwise.
Yeah, I like that. I like the Chiefs as well. So I think if you're a gambler and you get Patrick Mahomes plus 3.5 points, you grab it because it's going to be a long time before you get it again. So
exactly. Well, you know what? They're going to have to do a good job, though, stopping that run with Lamar Jackson and then, the three guys they got at running back. I mean, they rotate, you know, DK Dobbins and Ingram and what's the other guy's name? I can't think of it right now.
Gus Edwards.
Yeah, Gus Edwards. It's a heck of a rotation, and then you know it's. So, yeah, it could end up being more of a running thing than what we're thinking. I know we talked about it earlier, but, yeah, it's going to be fun to see how it all unfolds.
No doubt. No doubt. Can't get here soon enough. Trent, great stuff as always, buddy. We really appreciate the time. Enjoy the game. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Sounds good. Good talk with you. Take care.
All right, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer. What was the last team to beat the Ravens in the regular season? Well, the answer isn't sexy. It's the Browns. The fact that it was September 29th of last year is something. 1 year ago tomorrow was the last game the Ravens lost in the regular season.
Yeah, the Browns slapped him around, too, and that was after them losing to the Chiefs. By the way, I've been rewatching last year's Chiefs game. Cam Irving starting at left tackle. Tyreek Hill is not playing. Patrick Mahomes is clearly not 100%, hobbling around on his ankle. And they led, 30 to 13 going into the fourth quarter. So, you know, this Chiefs team, this Ravens team may be better. This Chiefs team is probably healthier, although they do miss other pieces that they would like to have in this game. But going to be a fun game. No matter what, we'll get you ready for it with the Central Bank of the Midwest pregame show. Mark Boerichter, is he in the house?
He's here.
He is here. So we know Mark Boerichter will join us, and we will let you hear the best of Andy Reid, the guys on the team, also the Baltimore Ravens. We'll hear from Glenn Clark, John Harbaugh, Wink Martindale. It's a big one. ESPN's been hyping it up since Friday, so you know they're fired up. Get ready. Monday Night Football will get you ready for it next.